This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Yesterday, Israel's parliament, the Knesset, voted in favor of Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's plan to withdraw from the Gaza Strip. This is far from the final word on this issue, but the vote represents an important moment. The plan calls for all the Jewish settlements in Gaza to be dismantled, along with four more on the West Bank. While opinion polls show that almost two-thirds of Israelis agree, settlers bitterly denounce the plan as a betrayal. Yesterday's vote fractured the Prime Minister's party and his cabinet and forced him into an awkward alliance with the opposition Labour Party. Now religious conservatives, once among Sharon's staunchest supporters, demand a nationwide referendum. More of his cabinet members vow to resign if he does not go along. The plan is almost equally unpopular with Palestinians and with some on the Israeli left who see it as a backhanded way to tighten Israel's grip on the much bigger and much more populous settlements on the West Bank. Later in the program, Red Sox-Cardinals World Series, past and present. But first, the withdrawal from Gaza. If you have questions about the plan, how it would work, and how it might affect Israel, the Palestinians, and the region, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're going to be talking with different people with stakes in the disengagement plan. But first, we turn to Stephen Erlanger, Jerusalem Bureau Chief for the New York Times. He joins us by phone from Jerusalem. And Steve, good to talk with you again.
Hi, Neil.
We're going to get to the very important details of this plan in just a moment. But in your piece this morning in the New York Times, you note that this vote is about a lot more than just Gaza.
Yes, it is. I mean, the debate in Israel, which has been coming for a long time, is really about what kind of state it's going to be and in what borders. There's been a period where Israelis have been mostly worried about security and have raised that to the highest virtue. But they know that there is no solution to living in the Middle East without dealing with the Palestinians as people, and part of what the debate is about is, can Israel give up the land it took by conquest in 1967 in return for peace, or will it be controlled, this decision, by a minority who believes that land was given to the Jewish people by God and wants settle on it and refuse to leave it. And that's the debate. So partly it's a debate about who rules Israel. Will it be ruled as a secular democracy by its parliament, or will it be ruled by religious law? And partly the debate is the right finally thinking that Israel cannot remain a democratic state if it rules over millions of Palestinians, and is trying to find a way to make itself smaller, more manageable, and more secure.
You quote Asher Susser, the director of the Moshe Dayan Center for the Middle East Studies, as saying this is, in a way, a debate about Israel's soul.
Well, I think that's true because, you know, part of the fascination of a Jewish state is how Jewish is it going to be, and which Jews are going to run it, and according to which interpretation of Judaism. And while it is a state meant to be a haven for all Jews, it also has to be run. And because it is a democracy, it is run by a sort of quite open parliamentary process. But because it is so full of different kinds of people, it's a very vivid, voluble and divided polity, and the whole call for a national referendum to follow a vote by parliament strikes some as not a very good idea in terms of democratic mandate.
Israel dismantled one settlement in the Sinai when, as part of the peace plan with Egypt, what, more than 20 years ago now. But the idea of dismantling settlements, this has never happened really before.
No, and what's important here is the Sinai, no one thought Israel would keep, you know, this was Egypt. Gaza and the West Bank are part of the land of Israel that religious Jews believe God gave to the people of the book, which is them. And much of the Bible takes place not just on the West Bank, but in Gaza. And you have people who were encouraged by governments, some of them in which Mr. Sharon served, to go to Gaza and settle the land. And they saw themselves as the avant-garde of Zionism and doing what not only the state wanted them to do, but what God wanted them to do. And now the state is telling them, well, sorry, we made a mistake. Life has changed. And there's, for many of them, a very serious and difficult choice they have to make between their political rulers of the state that they believe in and their religious rulers.
As we mentioned at the top, there will be many hurdles between now and what I guess next summer, which is the first time anybody envisions action actually beginning.
Yes, that's right. I mean, first of all, Mr. Sharon, you know, has significant political problems. I mean, he got this through really with the support of the left, his opposition. His own party was very badly split, and as you said at the top, four of his ministers are threatening to resign unless there is a referendum. Another party in the coalition is doing the same, and he fired two ministers last night who voted against him. So he already has a minority government, and the only way he will see this through is by working out some sort of cohabitation with Labour, which is on the left, to not let him fail and fall in Parliament. But he is, to some degree, a leader who is at war with at least half of his own party and who is trying to get the majority sentiment in Israel, which is for this Gaza plan, reflected in a parliament which is very badly split.
And there is also, we should be careful that while Israel would withdraw its settlements from Gaza, this would still be under very much Israel's control. The borders would be under Israel's control, the seacoast and the airspace.
That's absolutely right. And it should also be said that Israel will dismantle four small settlements in the West Bank, which is something the Bush administration insisted upon, that the West Bank be part of this. But, you know, for the army, this isn't much of a disengagement, which is a strange word for it. I mean, what is really happening is Israel is pulling out all its settlements from Gaza, about 8,000 people. So the army will no longer have to protect them, but the army will continue to patrol Gaza's airspace, coastline, borders. Israel says it has an international responsibility to patrol the border with Egypt under its peace treaty with Egypt, but it is trying to get the Egyptians to help control what goes in and out of Gaza. The fear from the Israeli army's point of view is that a chaotic Gaza will become a kind of Taliban-like Afghanistan where militant and terrorist groups move freely, have their headquarters, do what they like, and are using smuggled rockets and other equipment from Egypt to make war on Israel. So that's their concern.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address totn@npr.org. We're speaking with Steve Erlanger, the New York Times bureau chief in Jerusalem. And let's talk with Jarir, who's with us on the line from Troy, Michigan.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm originally from the Middle East, and my dad, my grandfather was a Palestinian, and we're pretty much living this conflict with the different distances, initially very close, but now from a distance. My real question is, I mean, the only way I see, or a lot of Arabs see, a solution for this problem is to have a viable independent state. And I'm not sure whether this move is just has a tactical purposes or, you know, is part of a step towards a final solution. Because, I mean, the reality of the matter is there are people living there, and they should have the right to determine their future as any other people living on the surface of the earth. And if they're not given that right, I don't think of anything else that would, you know, calm down the whole problem there or even solve it. I mean, it's just, So I'm not sure. I mean, I hope that this is for something that is good for the future. But, you know, the dynamics of the Israeli politics, too, are also complicated. And I mean, I don't know what to make of that. So I'm just asking your guest if he can give us a little bit more information, whether this is, like, going to stop at this, and that's it, and the Palestinians have to accept this or go back to, you know, resisting the Israeli presence, or is this going to be a step towards something more comprehensive, more permanent, let's say, that brings peace to everybody in that region?
Or more negotiated. Steve Erlanger?
Well, your caller very articulately has put the feelings of many Palestinians I talked to today. They know that Israel is doing this for Israel's own interests. This is not a gift to the Palestinians. But they also see it, many of them, as a chance to show that they can run Gaza efficiently. They are worried that Sharon, who's very explicit about wanting to keep Israeli control over significant settlements in the West Bank, is using the Gaza plan to calm down the rest of the world and reduce pressure on him to talk seriously to the Palestinians. And that's a very open question, and it's a serious question, and Mr. Sharon hasn't quite answered it. Some of his advisors would make you think this is as far as he's going. Mr. Sharon swears not. But the general Israeli line is we need to wait for a Palestinian leadership that can implement a peace treaty and crack down on militants and terrorism first. And many Palestinians also feel that. Many Palestinians feel this latest intifada has been a failure, but they are asking the international community, including the United States, to force Israel to recommit to peace talks with the Palestinians, not to have this Gaza withdrawal be a be-all and end-all, and not to do anything to damage the prospect of a viable and coherent Palestinian state, which, after all, George Bush has also supported.
Yeah, if I can just only make one comment. When we grew up on the basis of rejecting the presence of Israel. And then after so many years, we're getting to learn that, you know, maybe a better way is to coexist. And the only question that keeps boggling my mind is, well, why isn't the same way of thinking applies to the Israeli population? When you look around and you see you have significant populations of Arabs and Muslims who, you know, kind of feel for the Palestinians, and I think for an Israeli, for their best interest is just to end this struggle. I mean, it would calm down extremism, it would calm down, it would give hope and future for everybody. And it makes sense, you know, that for everybody to live, everybody has to share the pain and share compromises and go on. I mean, it's been 50 years. How much longer? Another 50, 150? I mean...
Jarir, I thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We have about 30 seconds left, and I wanted to ask Steve Erlanger. This is quite a challenge. Palestinians didn't have any voice in this, but this is quite a challenge for the Palestinian political leadership.
Well, it is, and many of them, particularly of a younger generation, want to take up that challenge. And it also should be said, Yasser Arafat, you know, now 75, has been sick in the last week or so, and nobody's quite sure with what. So the prospect of an important transition in the Palestinian world, which will come sooner or later anyway, is kind of in the air. He's been criticized a lot recently from inside for lack of transparency, lack of democracy, for not administering the Palestinian Authority very well. And there are a lot of Palestinians, like a lot of Israelis, who are very frustrated with this violent stalemate.
And Steve, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much. Steve Erlanger, the New York Times bureau chief in Jerusalem. More on this after a break. This is Talk of the Nation, NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's plan to withdraw troops and dismantle settlements in Gaza. That was approved yesterday by the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. We're going to hear from three different views on three people with three different views on Sharon's plan and its ramifications. First, Israel Harel, the founder and former chairman of the Council of Jewish Committees in Judea, Samaria, and Gaza, columnist for the Haaretz newspaper in Israel, and he joins us by phone from Ofra in Israel. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
What is the principal reason that you oppose yesterday's vote and Prime Minister Sharon's plan?
Because it's unilateral. There is no agreement with it. And once we commit this unilateral disengagement, the Qassam rockets will be spread all over southern Israel. Now, once the settlements are there and the army is protecting them, they managed to avoid the majority of the missiles to be launched into the cities in Israel, in the Negev desert, which almost every day they managed to send one or two. Once we are out, they will send in by dozens.
You see this as, in effect, a concession, unilateral concession, to people you regard as terrorists.
I am afraid that after 4 years of this war of terror that the Prime Minister didn't manage to stop, he takes a step that doesn't sound as courageous, and in fact he gives in to terror. He, that all his life, said that and preached to other Prime Ministers not to give in on terror, he is the one who gives in on terror.
Ariel Sharon, once seen as the champion of Israeli settlements, obviously now not seen that way. Do you regard this as a betrayal?
I don't like to use the term betrayal, especially on this day. Today we remember the 9 years of assassination of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, and at that time people talked about betrayal, and maybe one of those who listened to it didn't understand the difference between arguments and deeds. So I'm not using this term, but I feel, not only I mean hundreds of thousands of people in Israel feel that he did something that's against his own belief, and that's why he does all kinds of mistake, because there is an inner quarrel with him, within him, as the one who erected those settlements and today is uprooting them without giving a real reason to the nation why he does it.
As you know, there have been death threats now against this prime minister, and some rabbis, I gather, are saying that if soldiers are ordered to dismantle settlements, they should disobey their orders. Is that an appropriate response in a democracy where people get to vote through their representatives?
First of all, I oppose that order, that religious order. On the other hand, rabbis have the right to say as well as anybody else. About 2 years ago, there was a movement of people who disobeyed orders for other reasons, especially because their views are close to those of the Palestinians. And very, very important columnists and academics in Israel supported them. And then nobody said that this is not in their right to say. So I say again, I myself, as a former leader of this of those communities, I'm opposed to it, and I published my views in Haaretz and on the media. But I do defend the right of the rabbis. They have the same right, at least, than the others have to express their views.
Let's get a caller on the line, and Mark is with us from Philadelphia.
Yes, a question. When Israel pulled out of the Sinai, they literally destroyed the settlements that were there, so they became uninhabitable. Under the proposed plan, will the settlements that are vacated be destroyed, or will Palestinians be able to occupy them?
Israel Harel, my understanding is that they would be destroyed.
As far as I know, the private homes will be destroyed. The public homes, like synagogues, halls, and so on, will remain.
Isn't that a terrible waste? What about Tikkun Olam? Why can't decent people live in decent housing if it's going to be vacated? What's the point of destroying it?
This you have to ask the Prime Minister. I'm against the entire evacuation and uprooting, so I'm not the man who can answer. I definitely not defend the Prime Minister, which I think that he does a big mistake from any aspect you can imagine.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Mark. There are a lot of steps between yesterday's vote and the first steps to dismantle settlements or begin the withdrawal. Are you in favor of the plan proposed by some in the Knesset to have a nationwide referendum on this issue?
Definitely. I think that once a referendum will be taken, the opposition, if the majority of Israelis decide to evacuate, to go on, the opposition to it will accept it. If it's not going to be done by referendum, I'm afraid that it's going to be a severe existence, and I pray that not worse than that. Some people even say that we might undergo what America underwent in the Civil War. I do not predict such a thing, but others do, and I'll explain why. This Prime Minister was elected when he promised to the voters that he's against disengagement, and the Labour Party that ran against him, this was on their ticket. Now he was elected on a opposite ticket, and now he commits the policy of the Labour Party. Later on, he said, "Okay, let's go to a referendum within my own party." And he lost by 20% margin. His party said no for disengagement. This is our view. And then he brought it to the Central Committee of his party. Our system gives power to such, by law, to such bodies, and they again voted against him. So, and he goes against his own party. In fact, close to a half of the Knesset members from the Likud, his own party, voted yesterday against him. So he split his party, and therefore the only way to do it without violence, without big resistance, without splitting the Israeli society into two, if not into more pieces, is to go to a referendum.
Briefly, do you think the government can hold together long enough to actually go ahead and implement this plan?
If in 2 weeks the Prime Minister will not take the step towards a referendum, three of his main ministers, Minister of Finance Benjamin Netanyahu, Minister of Education Limor Livnat, and Minister of Agriculture, that he's the strong man in the party, Israel Katz, yesterday said in the media that they are going to leave government. And then the only outcome of it is going to election. So I'm not saying what's better, election or referendum, but Prime Minister Sharon won yesterday a battle, but it looks that he's going to lose the war.
Israel Harel, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Israel Harel, founder and former chairman of the Council of Jewish Communities in Judea, Samaria, and Gaza, columnist for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, and he joined us by phone from Ofra in Israel. Joining us now is Ghassan Khatib, labor minister for the Palestinian Authority, co-editor of bitterlemons.org, a website that presents Israeli and Palestinian viewpoints on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He's with us by phone from Ramallah on the West Bank, and thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Yesterday's vote in the Knesset was a critical step toward a pullout from Gaza. How would that withdrawal affect the peace process in your mind? How would it affect the prospects for a Palestinian state?
The withdrawal will be a significant step, but the voting that happened yesterday does not excite the Palestinians, because unfortunately we are used to a huge gap in terms of the gap between the Israeli statements, resolutions, and deeds. If this vote will lead into withdrawing settlements from Gaza or from any other part of the occupied territories, then this is going to be a step in the right direction. But we are a little bit skeptical, particularly because while Israel is talking and voting for the possibility of evacuating settlements in Gaza, they seem to be, practically speaking, busy expanding settlements in the vast majority of the Palestinian occupied territories, i.e. the West Bank. So if withdrawing settlements in Gaza is a smoke screen in order to consolidate occupation and expand illegal settlements in most of the occupied territories, which is West Bank, then this is not going to be helpful in moving both of us towards peace rather than the ongoing unfortunate violence.
There are, as you know, many in Israel on both the right and the left who see this as the start of a slippery slope, withdrawal from more settlements. That's what they fear or hope for, depending on which side of the spectrum they're on. Palestinians, though, don't see it that way?
We don't see it that way simply because while they are talking about withdrawal from settlements, practically speaking, they are expanding other settlements in most of the occupied territories. And I would be happy to hear an explanation from those Israelis. Why are they expanding settlements in most of the occupied territories if they look at this possible withdrawal from Gaza as a step towards ending the policy of illegal Jewish settlements in land that is owned by Palestinians?
What would happen in Gaza if the occupation ends? Who would be in charge there?
Well, if the occupation will end, then simply the Palestinian Authority will be in charge. But we have to look into some of the details, because this Israeli plan is about evacuating Gaza from Israeli presence, but keeping Gaza under the siege of the Israeli army, which will keep the disintegration of Gaza from the rest of the Palestinian territories, i.e. the West Bank, and the separation of Gaza from the outside world. The World Bank made an assessment, which was published last month, about the possible implementation of this plan, and concluded that this plan, if implemented as it is, it will lead into further deterioration of the social and economic situations, because Gaza is not viable economically on its own. Gaza is viable when it is an integral part of the Palestinian occupied territories, i.e. West Bank and Gaza Strip. So we think that it would be a step in the right direction if Israel, with the withdrawal of Gaza, will allow the free movement between Gaza and the West Bank and free access from and to Gaza, in addition to freezing the Israeli policy of expanding settlements in the West Bank in accordance with the roadmap and in accordance with the international legality.
There is, of course, another player in this game, and that is the nation of Egypt. What role is Egypt playing right now?
Egypt is always playing a positive role, and in this particular time, Egypt is planning together with the Palestinian Authority and in coordination with the United States and Israel to try to help rehabilitating and training and equipping the Palestinian security in order to be prepared to play the role it should play in the case of a real withdrawal from any part of the occupied territories.
We're talking about yesterday's vote in the Israeli Knesset to dismantle settlements in Gaza and withdraw from that area, though the plan calls for Israeli forces to maintain control of the borders of the Gaza Strip, airspace, and, of course, the seacoast. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address totn@npr.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Ghassan Khatib, what's the reaction of Palestinians today? At least there is a prospect of an Israeli withdrawal, something many people thought they might never see.
Well, frankly speaking, the Palestinian public is not excited with this, because the Palestinian public do not take Israelis on their words, but rather they take Israelis on their deeds. And There is, as I said, a gap between what they say and what they do. If the Israelis will withdraw from any settlement, I think the Palestinians will be excited and the Palestinians will feel that this is a step in the right direction. And again, what makes us really skeptical is the daily Israeli activities in consolidation of occupation in the West Bank. And frankly, Secondly, I mean, the fact that this move is a unilateral move, and that this move is in many of its aspects incompatible with the roadmap and with the basis of the international legality, this puts doubts on whether this move is going really to be helpful in moving both of us, the two people, towards the peace that is supposed to be subject of agreement between the two sides and based on the relevant stipulations of the international legality.
As we've noted, Palestinians played no part in this decision, yet if it becomes reality, there's little choice but to, I guess, accept it, the new reality. Would there be elections in the Gaza Strip? What would happen? Who would form the government?
There is a Palestinian Authority which is supposed to be in charge in all the Palestinian occupied territories. Now, we cannot hold election in Gaza Strip alone because Gaza is part of our homeland, which includes Gaza and the West Bank. And we hope that we will have the chance to conduct elections in all the Palestinian territories because we cannot deal with Gaza as a separate or a different entity. And I think the Palestinians, if Israel will withdraw from parts of Gaza, I think the Palestinians will continue to do all what it takes in order to ensure an end of the Israeli illegal and brutal occupation from all the Palestinian occupied territories.
What now do you see, and we just have a minute or so left with you, what now do you see as the future of the head of the Palestinian Authority, Yasser Arafat, now 75 years old, as mentioned earlier in the program, ill in the past few days? Is it time for new leadership?
Well, it's always useful to renew leaderships, but we have reservations on the way the United States government and the Israeli government is trying to effect from outside and in non-democratic ways a leadership change within the Palestinian society. We are interested in having elections in the Palestinian territories, and the Palestinian Authority have already started the process of voters registration, which is about to be finished, and we are hoping that the international community will convince or pressurize Israel to allow the Palestinian people conduct free elections the way we did in 1996. And in this case, and in the democratic way, the Palestinian people will decide whom of our leaders is going to remain and who is going to be replaced. And I think this is the way that needs to be respected by everybody. And until then, I hope, and most of the Palestinian people hope, that the outside world will respect and continue to recognize the leadership that the Palestinian people have democratically and freely elected.
Ghassan Khatib, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Ghassan Khatib, Labor Minister for the Palestinian Authority. When we come back from a short break, we'll be speaking with a former Israeli ambassador to the United States, who's now a consultant to Prime Minister Sharon. This is NPR News. Today we're talking about the vote yesterday in Israel's Knesset to withdraw from Gaza and what it means for the future of the region. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Zalman Shoval, an advisor to Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, formerly Israel's ambassador to the United States. He's with us by phone from Tel Aviv, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
As you know, we've been speaking earlier with Israel Harel and Ghassan Khatib, both of whom, for different reasons, oppose this plan. Tell us why, in your mind, this is a good idea and a good idea now.
Well, I'll give you an answer, hopefully, to both questions. First of all, it's a good idea because all the other ideas haven't been working. We have tried, Israeli governments in the past have tried, the Oslo process, if you remember the Oslo agreement. Today we are marking the 9th anniversary of the murder of Yitzhak Rabin. He certainly had the best of intentions and signed an agreement with Yasser Arafat. A few months after that agreement, Palestinian terrorism started again. Buses blew up and so on and so forth. People were disgruntled in Israel, of course. And then we had the Barak government, together with ex-President Clinton, at Camp David and Taba, offering the Palestinians more or less everything, but the, more or less everything, I would say, 97% of the territory is East Jerusalem so far, and Arafat refused to sign that this would be an end of conflict. So Sharon, Prime Minister Sharon, said, if we don't have a partner, and that's a tragedy, but we don't, let's try to unblock the frozen peace process unilaterally. Let us remove ourselves from the Gaza Strip, which is a very critical area, and especially with regards to the 1.5 million Palestinians there, with 7,500 Jewish settlers amongst them, also a big security headache. And besides, because the Palestinians have not lived up to their first commitment under the roadmap, we shall actually do something which is in accordance, perhaps not formally, but spiritually and practically, with the first chapter of the roadmap. We are beginning to withdraw, and we'll wait. If one day there will be a different Palestinian leadership, if Arafat will be out of the way, we will get down and be able to negotiate with the future Palestinian leadership about permanent peace, which we all hope for. So that's an answer to both questions, really. Why and why now?
As you know, many within and without Israel balked at the statement that was made by another of Prime Minister Sharon's advisors, Dov Weinglass. He said that the withdrawal from Gaza was a way to freeze the peace process. And as you know, others are concerned that this is a way just to consolidate Israeli control over the much larger and more populous settlements in the West Bank. How do you respond?
No, let's separate both things. You know, Prime Minister Sharon, after the Dov Weinglass interview, said nobody ever regrets an interview which he didn't make. So, Dov Weinglass is a very smart lawyer, a good advisor, not necessarily a politician, and he apparently thought that by making some statements which were really uncalled for and do not reflect Prime Minister Sharon's opinion, he would assuage the opposition inside the Likud party, parts of the Likud party, to this whole program. Obviously, it backfired. It did not achieve the purpose which he had hoped for. But that's the first part of the question. The second part, look, this is not some sort of trade-off, Gaza against the West Bank or vice versa. The West Bank situation, where our position has been recognized not only by the Security Council of the United Nations in its original resolution 242 with regards to security, but also by the Bush letter to Sharon a few months ago, which was endorsed by Senator Kerry as well. That's a different situation. Not only are there 240,000 Israelis living there, but most of them live in those major settlement blocks which were established by different Israeli governments mainly for security and strategic reasons, and they will be there. Now, once, as I said before, we have a Palestinian partner, they will come with their claims, we will come with our claims, nobody is committed to accept the other side's claims, and we will negotiate about the exact geographic situation, the exact percentages, the lot of the Palestinians living in Israeli-held areas, of perhaps Israelis living in Palestinian-held areas, but that's still far away in the future.
Let's get a caller on the line, and let's go to Eric, who's calling from Chico, California.
Yes, sir, it's a great... Hello?
Yes, go ahead,
yes,
please.
Yes, Eric, I'm listening.
Yes, sir, it's a great honor to be asking you a question. What I'd like to know is, since Israel is in violation of, by my count, 24 United Nations Security Council resolutions, and Israel was in support of invading Iraq, ostensibly to punish them for violating UN resolutions, why does Israel not pull back the pre-1967 border, as most of the international community would want them to?
Well, I'm sure that the enemies of Israel and the terrorists would like us to do that, but there's no United Nations resolution calling on us to return to the Green Line. On the contrary, when Resolution 242 was promulgated by the Security Council, back in 1967. It was specifically declared that Israel will only withdraw from certain areas, not all the areas, and only to defensible and secure borders, that was the term, and all the initiators of that resolution, on the American side, on the British side, more or less everybody except the Soviet Union and the Arabs and France, said Israel should never go back to where it was all of 8 miles wide, 14 kilometers. So we are not in violation of any UN resolution. The most important UN resolution is against terror and violence. And unfortunately, on the Palestinian side, violence is going on every day.
And let's see if we can get one more question in. This is Herb calling from Bridgeton, New Jersey.
Hello, gentlemen. I have a question that has actually developed into two questions.
Well, if you could just keep it to one, because we're running out of time, Herb.
Okay. As you know, before 1948, there was a Palestine mandate, and under that mandate, the JNF put land all over the mandate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of that land is in the Gaza Strip. Now, if they remove the inhabitants from the Gaza Strip, will there be an exchange of property or land of equal value when they move somewhere else?
Well, Herb, it's a good question, and you have a good point. If we ever find a Palestinian partner, I think subjects of this sort will have to come up. Sure, there are Jewish properties in the Gaza Strip. There's even a very important Jewish cemetery in Gaza. And there are Palestinian or Arab-held lands in other parts. So these things will come up. And I would like to use the opportunity of your question in saying, look, morally, historically, and we believe legally, we have a right to be anywhere in the former British Mandate, which includes all of the West Bank and Gaza. But we made a choice, not because we don't have a right to be there. We made a choice that in order to give peace a chance, a better chance than before, because we are also concerned with our own security problems, we will withdraw from areas which perhaps we should have stayed in if it were a different situation, if there was peace.
Zalman,
we make that gesture in order to accommodate, and among other things, international opinion, but mainly in order to accommodate our own interests and hopefully those of the Palestinians as well.
Zalman Shoval, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Mr. Ambassador Shoval, former Israeli ambassador to the United States, now an advisor to Prime Minister Ariel Sharon.